and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us on Alaska Public Media as we travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans.
This week, former United States Ambassador to Sweden Mark Brzezinski. He's the executive director of the U.S. government's Arctic Executive Steering Committee, and he spoke to a sold-out meeting that was held jointly by the Alaska World Affairs Council and the Anchorage Downtown Rotary. Alaska World Affairs Council board member Deborah Smith provides the introduction for us at the Dena'ina Center on January 26, 2016. We'll let her start us off.
Well, it's my honor to introduce our speaker today, Ambassador Mark Brzezinski. He is the former United States Ambassador to Sweden and currently serves as the Executive Director of the U.S. Arctic Executive Steering Committee. On January 21, 2015 of last year, President Obama signed an executive order establishing this committee, and the purpose is to enhance the coordination of our national efforts in the Arctic. The Arctic Committee was established, as I say, to oversee implementation of the national strategy in the Arctic region. The committee convenes at the deputy secretary level to guide the development of department and agency plans and to assure that all federal activity is well coordinated and better communicated to partners such as the state of Alaska and Alaska Native communities, the Congress, business communities, and other international partners. Ambassador Brzezinski has substantial experience in Arctic issues, and at each of your places is an article that was published today in the Huffington Post that was authored by Mr. Brzezinski as well as Dr. Holdren, the President's Science Advisor, about the Arctic. Welcomed being called Mark in these introductory remarks. So, when Mark served as the ambassador to Sweden between 2011 to 2015, he worked closely with the Swedish government during its chairmanship of the Arctic Council and was very involved in President Obama's appearance at the Stockholm at a meeting with all five heads of governments of Nordic countries that met together to discuss the shared approach to climate change and the future of the Arctic, among other issues. He's made the Arctic a central focus of his tenure, both in Sweden, speaking February 2015 at Dartmouth College, where he gave the Montgomery Fellowship Lecture on the Arctic. He noted that the Arctic is simultaneously a strategic problem and a human problem. He's pioneered using communication and social media to share how the looming crisis in the Arctic is a tangible preview of the crisis confronting the world as a whole. And he's initiated and helped develop a new U.S. Fulbright scholarship devoted to the study of the future of the Arctic. The Arctic Fulbright, funded by the State Department, is a unique two-year program composed of researchers selected from the eight Arctic Council countries. Before becoming ambassador, he served on the National Security Council staff under President Clinton. He was the first as director for Russia and Eurasia, then as director for the Balkans. He received his undergraduate degree at Dartmouth and his law degree at the University of Virginia and his doctorate in political science from Oxford University. He was a Fulbright scholar in Warsaw, Poland between 1991 to 1993, a fascinating time to be there. You see, we were chatting earlier. And he was a partner in a DC law firm before joining the Obama administration. And he's currently a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. So Ambassador Brzezinski is here today to speak to us on the Arctic Executive Steering Committee, 1 year on, a report from the Executive Director. Please join me in welcoming him here to Alaska.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Judge. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I am so glad to actually be here. I was able to brave the snow and the dangers of cold Washington, D.C. to make it to balmy, comparatively much warmer, Alaska. My day, if I fall over off the stage, I hope the head of the CDC who is here today, my colleague from the CDC, revives me. My day yesterday began at 4 a.m. when, to get here, I drove from Washington to Richmond, Virginia, caught a flight from Richmond to Atlanta, from Atlanta to Seattle, and from Seattle to finally Anchorage last night. And then I had dinner with Julie Kitska from the Alaska Federation of Natives. And I think I was practically toppling over at my seat last night. So my apologies to her, but absolutely worth coming here and talking with you about the future of the Arctic. It is so great to see a number of friends. I find the Arctic to be a strong network of people that who I am gradually getting introduced into, and I am the beneficiary of particularly a number of mentors since I began this position 6 months ago, some of whom are here today. Fran Ulmer, the chair of the Arctic Research Commission, a national asset to the United States on the Arctic, in my opinion. Fran Ulmer, it has been an incredible source of advice and guidance to me and the White House. Alice Rogoff, I don't know if Alice is here today, but I had a meeting with her earlier. There she is over there. What an amazing communicator and someone who has really, I think, generated part of the awakening of America to the Arctic. And my longtime friend, Margaret Williams from the World Wildlife Fund, who while I was in Sweden, before that in the private sector, and now at the White House, has been a never-ending source of advice, of mentorship and friendship, and teaching me about this treasured, awesome landscape as I look out the window. I want to thank the Alaska World Affairs Council and the Rotary Club of Anchorage for the opportunity to speak with you today. The timing of this event could not be better. On January 21st, we celebrated the first anniversary of the establishment of the Arctic Executive Steering Committee for the U.S. government. And this, for those who care about the Arctic, this is your committee. It consists of every major department and every major agency of the U.S. government who have been, in perhaps more of a fragmented way in the past, been working on Arctic challenges and problems. And the goal of the president is to unify our government around a unity of purpose and a shared sense of the opportunity and the shared sense of the challenge as it pertains to the future of the Arctic. I can't think of many similar government platforms in the sense that it's partly domestic, partly international, and the Arctic is everything. It's tribal and native, it's health, it's energy, it's maritime and shipping, it's international, and the urgency of these challenges is clear. As President Obama said about his visit to Alaska last fall, make no mistake, I quote him, make no mistake, the looming crisis in Alaska's Arctic is a tangible preview of the looming crisis of the global condition. So at this moment, after 1 year of operation of the Arctic Executive Steering Committee, it's not too early to assess its record and to also begin to share its goals and priorities as we go into 2016. The AESC, the Arctic Executive Steering Committee, is dedicated to coordinating all the federal agencies that fund or conduct activities in the Arctic to implement U.S. priorities, and not to do so in alone, but in cooperation with state, local, tribal, and international actors. The Arctic is so many different things, but as the president indicated, it's also an augury. It's a foreshadow of things to come. The Arctic doesn't live in a vacuum. It doesn't exist in a vacuum. It exists as part of a global context. And what is happening here provides a window of what will happen globally in the future. And so if there is a time to zero in on what is happening here, it is this moment. In that way, the Arctic's a beaconing at this time of American awakening on the Arctic. Why is the Arctic important? Because what happens in the Arctic doesn't stay in the Arctic. The Arctic serves as a refrigerator for the planet. Today, the Arctic is warming 2 times the average rate of the rest of the world. And as the Arctic warms more dramatically than anywhere else on Earth, of course, it impacts life for the 4 million residents of the Arctic. It jeopardizes food supply for communities, Arctic communities, reliant upon subsistence. It results in erosion of physical infrastructure of coastal villages like Kivalina, where your lieutenant governor was just last week reporting on the conditions of that rapidly eroding island. Particularly, and it affects weather patterns across the globe, particularly at mid-latitudes in North America, Europe, and Asia. It also impacts all of us on the rest of the planet. 80% of the land in Alaska is underlain by some kind of permafrost, and permafrost thaw in the Arctic has the potential to release large quantities of greenhouse gases, such as methane and CO2, into the atmosphere. Warming temperatures have resulted in more extensive wildfires. Just last year, 2015, Arctic wildfires burned roughly the landmass of the state of New York. All of these contribute to a positive feedback loop which exacerbates the impacts of climate change. So there's a direct interaction between what happens in the Arctic and what happens in the rest of the world. If we do not mitigate the impacts of climate change and increase resiliency, ecosystems could collapse, food and water shortages could result in large-scale human migration, contributing to both global economic and security disruption. On the flip side, any legitimate action to mitigate the impacts of climate change and enhance societal resilience requires unprecedented levels of international cooperation, and I'll even say the word, and self-sacrifice. That's the essence of the challenge we face today. I have a lifelong interest in the Arctic, which I built upon during my tenure as United States Ambassador to Sweden. While I lived in Sweden, I traveled to Sweden's high north and spent time with Sweden's Sami people, their indigenous people. I went to visit with them in their homes, to have meals with them, and to visit with them remote locations where one can bear witness to the direct impact of climate change on the organizing principle of their society, reindeer herding. I did a series of films with Sweden's leading actor, Felix Herngren, on the impact of climate change on Sweden's Arctic area, particularly on their most local of populations, the Sami people. I did that in order to combine our platforms, my platform as US ambassador, which only had so much reach, and his platform as Sweden's leading actor, which had immensely more reach. And that was the opportunity of the films. Ladies and gentlemen, this is why the Arctic matters.
If this climate change keeps going at this rate, I'm pretty sure that the reindeer won't survive it.
Yeah.
It goes too fast right now. And without the reindeer, the whole Sami culture will disappear.
Mm.
And the world will be an indigenous people poorer.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Nila Inga, a Sami leader from that part of Sweden above the Arctic Circle. And his warning is one that we should heed. Just as he talks about the demise of his society in just a generation or two, we should also be worried about the impacts on our society, and particularly on our most central interest in all of this, and that is our children and our children's children. And Nila will be the first person to tell you about how reindeer herding society, in Sweden is truly coming to an end. In the winter, the reindeer cannot sniff the pasture through the snow because of the increasing number of ice layers in the changing content of the snow. Ticks, all people know about ticks. Ticks have never been seen in Sweden's Arctic area. Now ticks are all over the reindeer in the Sami area. And of course, ticks carry disease and viruses. The Arctic is simultaneously a strategic challenge and a human challenge. And it's not an easy policy challenge to address. It requires a multifaceted solution. The lands and waters impacted by climate change are the same lands and waters that communities fish, hunt, cherish, and depend upon. Dwindling reindeer and walrus populations pose a challenge not only to Arctic biodiversity, but also to the continued existence of societies above the Arctic Circle. Decreased sea ice levels have opened up new Arctic routes for merchant and passenger ships, but have also increased the need for cooperation among nations to respond to environmental and human safety concerns. through appreciation of the interconnected and interdependent nature of this challenge, we'll be able to develop a multifaceted solution. As set forth in our national strategy for the Arctic region, and President Obama was the first president to develop a national strategy for this strategic space. And it really is a strategic space. Just like space and cyberspace, the Arctic is a strategic space that the whole world has an interest in. We share deep and diverse ecological, cultural, scientific, economic, and security interests in the Arctic, and no country is preponderant in the Arctic. We need to protect national interests in the region, including national defense, sovereign rights and responsibilities, freedom of the high seas, maritime safety, energy, environmental stewardship, promotion of science and research, and preservation of indigenous culture. The starting point for tactically implementing priorities in the Arctic are the legal and policy underpinnings of our approach to the region. And the very beginning point, the starting point, in terms of the legal evolution and policy making in the Arctic was the Arctic Research and Policy Act of 1984, which created two groups that work under the Arctic Executive Steering Committee and coordinate federal-funded Arctic research, the U.S. Arctic Research Commission and the Interagency Arctic Research and Policy Committee, which are housed in the National Science and Technology Council. And it's important to note that people from Alaska sit on these different institutions. Take the Arctic Research Commission, which have as part of their membership Fran Ulmer, Marie Green, Dave Benton, Mary Peet from Alaska. It's important to emphasize that bringing in that local understanding, the people who really know your territory, into the policymaking process is a priority. In 2009, policy directives on national security and homeland security were created to address these interests in the Arctic. These directives establish priorities which advance international cooperation, sustainable resource management, economic development, and scientific research. In May 2013, the U.S. National Strategy for the Arctic was published, followed by an implementation plan in 2014. Adoption of that implementation plan in 2014, which really articulates and clarifies all the different undertakings that the U.S. government is pursuing in the Arctic, really took the National Strategy for the Arctic region's execution up a level. And when you think about your federal government, you have to look at it this way. You get the vision from the president, you get the strategy from the top policymakers to implement that vision, and then you have the tactical implementation of that strategy. That is what that implementation plan was meant to do. Today, almost every agency with responsibilities in the region has done an Arctic strategy to specifically guide internal agency priorities. It's also important to note that there was the development of the IARPIC Science Plan 2013 and 2017, which really advanced scientific collaboration between the federal government's different agencies. And it's important that these two things are not divorced and separate and alien to each other, that in fact we are funding science that is directly informing and benefiting the policymaking process. That is one of the goals of IARPIC. I will also say that the last couple of months, I have been driving forward what will be published, I hope, next month, and that is a 2016 implementation plan that captures both the increasing number of activities we have underway in the Arctic and provides a look of undertakings to be done based on the future, based on the president's commitments that he made while in Alaska, and lots of other sources. On January 21st, 2015, almost a year ago, a little more than a year ago, President Obama signed an executive order establishing the Arctic Executive Steering Committee to enhance coordination of U.S. government activities in the Arctic and provide a whole-of-government approach to the region. Its goals include, as I said, setting priorities. Of all the different possible priorities, what will be the main priorities? Second, accountability and evaluation on progress on those priorities. For President Obama, very important is consistent assessment on progress for goals that have been stated. So take, for example, his visit to this city and to Alaska in September of this year. During the president's visit, more than 40 commitments were rolled out by the president, some more visible than others, the renaming of Mount Denali, the Denali Commission's new role, new icebreakers. But underneath those were a myriad of others. And so what I have done in my role as executive director of the Arctic Executive Steering Committee was to break out line by line every single one of those commitments on a spreadsheet, identify the, of course, the commitment or the promise made, the person responsible at the relevant agency, the agency responsible, timing and milestones. And I am repeatedly and consistently driving forward achievement of those promises, whether it's EPA water construction grants for native villages, USDA high energy cost grants, the Department of Energy's competition for on renewable and alternative energy, and the like. So the second goal for the Arctic Executive Steering Committee is accountability. Third, advancing coordination among state, local, and Alaska Native governments, Alaska Native organizations, academic research organizations, and other stakeholders. I have found the Arctic to be a topic ripe for increased coordination. And I have been surprised by the number of people who say for the first time they're engaging the White House on this, that, or the other topic is now. That's too late, and we're doing all we can, quite frankly, to increase stakeholder engagement, whether it's with the business community, whether it's with Native communities, state and local entities, international partners, and the like. And as I said, the Arctic is a myriad of challenges and opportunities. And so it's an engagement challenge just in terms of bandwidth. But the benefits are huge, and the Arctic is an issue that we are only going to be able to do together with others. And so that multiplier effect is key. The last goal for the Arctic Executive Steering Committee is supporting the U.S. chairmanship of the Arctic Council. That is something that we began to prepare for several years before undertaking that chairmanship, and we are driving forward a very active agenda under the leadership of Admiral Bob Papp, the State Department's Special Representative for the Arctic. Dr. Holdren, who is the President's Science Advisor and Director of the White House's Office of Science and Technology Policy, chairs the Arctic Executive Steering Committee, and Amy Pope, the Assistant to the President for Homeland Security Affairs, serves as its Vice Chair. And ladies and gentlemen, one could easily envision the Arctic Executive Steering Committee being placed under the National Security Council, for example, because of the national security and foreign policy and international challenges and opportunities associated with the Arctic. One could easily imagine the Arctic Executive Steering Committee being placed under the National Economic Council because of all the commercial interests that are growing as it pertains to the Arctic. But the President placed it under the Office for Science and Technology Policy because science is the essence in making progress on all these different challenges and opportunities, whether it's science or commercial or health or climate change or the other areas. A show of the U.S. commitment to the Arctic is seen in the number of federal agencies conducting or supporting activities in the Arctic. More than 25 federal agencies and offices are members of the Arctic Executive Steering Committee, and the diversity of agency roles and the multiplicity of interests captures the fact that the Arctic is a constellation of so many different opportunities and challenges. The Arctic Executive Steering Committee has achieved a lot during its first year, and I'm pleased to go through just a couple of the accomplishments to date to report to you what your government is working on when it comes to this strategic space. Let me start with what happened here this past late August and September, because one of the very first accomplishments of the Arctic Executive Steering Committee was to build a presidential visit to the Arctic. And that was as soon as the president indicated that he wanted to go to the Arctic and to Alaska, we jumped on it as an opportunity in so many different ways, but first of all, to communicate the Arctic, to communicate to America that we are an Arctic country. And where the president goes, the eyes of the world go. That's important because still too few people are aware of the challenges and the opportunities of the Arctic. It's still somewhat of an esoteric topic, and introducing people to the Arctic is an important public goal. President Obama traveled to Alaska to bear witness. In his speech at the Glacier Conference in Alaska, he said, referring to your grandchildren, they'll want to see this. They'll want to experience it just as we've gotten to do in our own lives. They deserve to live lives free from fear and want and peril. Ask yourself, are you doing everything you can to protect it? The trip was historic. It was the first time ever a sitting U.S. president traveled to the Arctic, and the world took note. That week was not eclipsed by other news developments, and the message and the visuals from the Arctic were tremendously empowering to the policy effort underway now. Here you see the president in Resurrection Bay. I'm going to advance this slide to where he is at Exit Glacier. How do you communicate the impacts of climate change? You do it with clear evidence. Nothing provides clearer evidence than glaciers and the massive melt that has impacted them. Here you see the president visiting Exit Glacier. This glacier used to extend to the location where the president is standing on the right, and as a result of global warming, the glacier has significantly receded. Alaska's glaciers alone are currently estimated to be losing 50 billion tons of water per year to the sea, which of course reduces ocean salinity and contributes to sea level rise. My first time in Alaska was when I was able to travel through parts of Alaska with my brother, and we went through, among other places, Glacier Bay National Park. Will Glacier Bay National Park in Alaska have no glaciers in the future? Other topics that were focused on during the president's visit include coastal erosion. Changes in the Arctic are jeopardizing Arctic coastal communities. Permafrost thawing is accelerating coastal erosion, threatening the built infrastructure and the safety of coastal communities. A recent U.S. Geological Survey report found that northern Alaska is experiencing one of the highest shoreline erosion rates in the world. One of the first interagency working groups established under the Arctic Executive Steering Committee was the Coastal Erosion Working Group. Many of the Coastal Erosion Working Group's recommendations have been implemented, including first and foremost, presenting to the people of Alaska and beyond the full array of federal programs pertaining to resilience and funding resources to make this information more readily available to Alaskan communities through the publication of a compendium of federal programs. In addition, the president asked the Denali Commission to play a key coordination role for building climate resilience in Alaska. The Denali Commission will serve as a one-stop shop for matters related to coastal resilience in Alaska. Another important strategic focus pertaining to the Arctic involves the strategic dimension of shipping and maritime. Parts of the Arctic are accessible now for the first time. This has attracted an increasing number of shipping, research, and tourist vessels traversing Arctic waters and enhanced the importance of marine security, accurate up-to-date mapping and charts, and the capability to carry out search and rescue missions or respond to oil spills. Although navigation of Arctic waters will remain challenging, the loss of sea ice is opening new navigation routes in the Arctic. Given the potential to cut transit time from Europe to Asia, by transiting via the Northern Sea Route and the Northwest Passages, the opening of the Arctic has the potential of impacting the kind of shipping routes much like the opening of the Suez and Panama canals did. For example, a voyage from Rotterdam to Shanghai via the Northern Sea Route is 22%, one-fifth shorter than by the current route through the Suez Canal. Last January, the U.S. Committee on the Marine Transportation System, the CMTS, released a report with a 10-year projection of maritime activity in the U.S. Arctic region. A conservative estimate of the number of vessels operating in the Bering Strait and U.S. Arctic in 2025 is 420, a 100% increase over current transit levels. The number of all vessels for the high-growth scenario, incorporating all maximum growth elements for 2025, is 1,262, which is a 500% increase in the Bering Strait transits over current levels. We're also seeing new types of vessels transiting the Arctic. For example, the Crystal Serenity plans to become the first luxury cruise ship to sail all the way through the Northwest Passage in August 2016, with a capacity for approximately 1,000 passengers. That won't be the first cruise ship that takes that route. Tickets are $21,000 each, and it's sold out. Other tourist carriers notice that. We have to be prepared for that kind of increase in activity. The first commercial bulk carrier to make the transit across the Northwest Passage did so last year in waters that were previously limited to ice-strengthened vessels or icebreakers. The increased traffic raises the urgency to improve marine transportation services and infrastructure, both to take advantage of the opportunities presented and to protect safety of life, property, and the environment. According to NOAA's Arctic Report Card, in 2015, the maximum Arctic Ocean sea ice extent occurred 15 days earlier than average and was 7% less than the average for 1981 to 2010. It was an all-time record low. But on the flip side, navigating Arctic waters will still be a challenge. So that's why it was so important that President Obama announced new steps to accelerate the acquisition of new Coast Guard icebreakers, I emphasize plural icebreakers, from 2020 to 2022. Heavy icebreakers ensure the U.S. ability to conduct, protect, and manage our natural resources, conduct search and rescue activities, pursue science, maintain domain awareness, and provide for regional peace and stability. In addition, the Arctic Executive Steering Committee has pursued some specific initiatives in marine security and environmental stewardship over the past year. Here are three examples. First, NOAA and the Coast Guard are increasing their mapping and charting efforts in the Bering, Chukchi, and Beaufort Seas, regions with newly opened water. This includes a joint effort among NOAA, the U.S. Geological Survey, and the State of Alaska to use satellite data for shoreline and nearshore coastal mapping critical to observing climate change. NOAA will modernize and install additional instrumentation on the Arctic coast to monitor the effects of climate change and enable safe marine operations, including a permanent national water level observing network station and up to six temporary stations. And third, NOAA is also developing a new operational Arctic sea ice thickness satellite product. President Obama insists that the U.S. must continue to play a global leadership role in the Arctic. This includes the responsibility to strengthen international cooperation in the Arctic. That is a key point because we are seeing more and more countries indicate a great interest in the Arctic, even if their interest in the Arctic is generalized and not distinctive and specific. You're seeing countries in Asia, for example, really talking about putting serious resources on the Arctic without a complete picture on where to put it, and that's an awesome opportunity for America to collaborate with others and to join not just intent and passion for the Arctic, but resources and manpower. The Arctic Executive Steering Committee coordinated development of the conference Global Leadership in the Arctic, Cooperation, Innovation, Engagement, and Resilience, GLACIER, in Anchorage in August 2015. Representatives from 21 nations attended the summit. Of course, the Arctic nations attended, but it was important that the foreign ministers of the Netherlands and Korea were also there. Those are two important shipping and maritime countries, folks that we will have to coordinate as we pursue a more nuanced and informed alignment on maritime and shipping interests as it pertains to the Arctic. President Obama delivered the closing remarks at the Glacier Conference, in which he emphasized that the administration is pursuing a balanced agenda, which includes resource development, economic opportunities, reliable and affordable energy for Alaska, environmental protection and conservation, preservation of indigenous peoples' culture, and climate change mitigation. The Glacier Conference preceded the COP21 and was an important driver for political will for ambitious action on climate change in Paris. In Paris, during the COP21 negotiations, the Arctic was an important topic, I was very glad to see. And that, of course, that COP21 effort saw nearly 200 countries come together to adopt the most ambitious climate change agreement in history. But to the Glacier Conference, I loved how it created a platform for the world to come together on the Arctic. Because as I said before, the Arctic is a space where we're not preponderant. We're gonna have to work with others to do something there on these different issues. And that conference here in this center provided an opportunity to compare undertakings of the different Arctic countries and others to see where we're compatible, and from there to see where things can be expanded jointly. Further on international cooperation, tying together international cooperation and marine stewardship is seen in the new Arctic Coast Guard Forum. The 8 Arctic nations established an Arctic Coast Guard Forum in October 2015. The forum will leverage collective efforts to foster safe, secure, environmentally responsible maritime activity in the Arctic. The U.S. Coast Guard is actively working with international partners to implement high-priority actions identified by the Arctic Executive Steering Committee, including enhancing collaboration on bilateral agreements with neighboring Arctic countries.
Excuse me. I think our speaker's been informed that if some of you have to return to work soon, he won't be insulted, but he can stay, and he's enthused about what he has to say.
Absolutely. But I will wrap up pretty soon, but I want to zero in on just a couple more things. First of all, the role of the Native communities and the coordination with them. The Arctic Native corporations and the tribal communities are a big deal in Alaska, and the president recognizes that. During his trip to Alaska, President Obama visited several tribal communities in Bristol Bay. President Obama met with fishermen on Kanakanak Beach, focusing on the protection of salmon runs in Bristol Bay, the most important salmon run in the world, with large importance for both commercial and subsistence fishing. The Arctic Executive Steering Committee is working through the Department of Health and Human Services to form a task force to ensure more effective consultation and collaboration with Arctic Native tribes and entities, including Alaska Native corporations. The Arctic Executive Steering Committee has also coordinated numerous federal efforts to enhance fish and wildlife management and the quality of drinking water in rural Alaskan villages. The Department of Interior recently provided funding for the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission and the Yukon River Intertribal Fish Commission to help build capacity in these commissions to ensure that traditional tribal knowledge is meaningfully employed in the conservation and the rebuilding of Chinook salmon stocks. We're also working to enhancing our understanding of the Arctic through scientific activities such as biodiversity monitoring, earth observing, and coastal mapping and charting. These scientific activities inform not only the scientific community, but policymakers well beyond the federal government seeking solutions to the various challenges in the Arctic. To better understand changes in both marine and terrestrial environments in the Arctic, a new digital elevation model initiative to develop high-resolution topographic maps in the Arctic is underway. In October, the National Science Foundation and the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency announced they will collaborate with academia and industry to develop publicly available high-resolution satellite-derived maps of Alaska by 2016 and of the entire Arctic by 2017. On the screen behind me, you can see an elevation map of Alaska's tabletop mountain using the best data previously available to the public. And here is the identical map based on the new data. So the difference between the two is easily seen. Conservation of marine biodiversity is another challenge which the Arctic Executive Steering Committee has taken steps to address. The Arctic Marine Biodiversity Observing Network is a research partnership between university and federal investigators and is integrated with the Alaska Ocean Observing System as a central data node to provide user-friendly data. ANBUN conducted the first of three biodiversity sampling cruises in 2015, with others to follow this year and next. Arctic observing and monitoring will be a growth industry, I assure you. So what is our path forward? We've accomplished a lot in just 1 year. As I said, more than 40 initiatives announced during President Obama's trip to Alaska alone, and that's just one set of lines of effort among many. There's much more to be done, and time is not on our side. Very important for you as American citizens will be to see what is announced on February 9th during the rollout of our federal government's budget, which will occur on February 9th. Because it's one thing to be passionate about the Arctic, it's another thing to fund and resource endeavors that will improve the conditions pertaining to the challenges that we're talking about. As I said before, we're finalizing a progress report on U.S. accomplishments under the Arctic Implementation Plan. Community-based observing will only grow because of greater recognition that what happens in the Arctic impacts the rest of the world. Unprecedented scientific cooperation, though, is needed to build a shared understanding and a collective response to the impacts of climate change in the Arctic, and expect the U.S. government and the White House in 2016 to be taking significant action, especially to advance international scientific cooperation. I'd like to play a clip from President Obama's appearance on the show Running Wild with Bear Grylls, because I feel that it is so applicable to what we're trying to do with the Arctic Executive Steering Commission.
So a bear has chewed on this sucker.
Yeah, but we're gonna cook it up, so it's gonna be good.
All right.
So I think the president looked a little surprised when I pulled out this sort of bloody carcass of half-eaten salmon.
Oh, I heard a little sizzle there.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
I think a piece of salmon, that'll work just fine. It would have been nice if we had had a cracker to go with it.
Okay, should we try a little bit of this?
Yeah, let's try it out. That's tasty.
Well, that's proper Alaskan salmon for you.
That, to me, is a metaphor to what we're trying to do. We're trying to address this strategic challenge using new tools and new partnerships. And that will be the only way we can solve some of these challenges that are of a scale and a price that we find in the Arctic. But we are doing all we can as we go forward with our international partners to advance a multiplier, effect. We find the new government of Prime Minister Trudeau in Canada to be very oriented towards science in the Arctic. That provides some possibilities that we're hopeful about, but what most importantly, what we're looking for is to engaging you, the people of Alaska and the Arctic, to inform what is the best approach on all these many challenges. That's why I welcome the chance to get up here to Anchorage, Alaska today. I look forward to working with you in the coming year to make this a year where the Arctic really ascended and there was an awakening in America pertaining to it. So with that, thank you very much. Thank you for coming today.
You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans. Today, we've heard from the Executive Director of the U.S. Government's Arctic Executive Steering Committee, Mark Brzezinski. He was addressing a luncheon hosted by the Alaska World Affairs Committee and the Anchorage Downtown Rotary at the Dinaina Center on January 26, 2016. We also heard from Alaska World Affairs Council Board Member Deborah Smith. Thanks for tuning in with us today on Addressing Alaskans. I'm your host and producer, Eric Bork.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. The views expressed are those of the hosts and participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.